and welcome everyone to Three Peas in a Poly Podcast. This is Chris with my amazing co-hosts, Evan and Avery. How are you both doing?
Hey there.
Hi.
We are so excited to be back with another episode. Today we are going to be talking about poly and being queer. Sounds exciting.
It's very exciting.
We got quite a few different items to talk about in this category today. So we're going to get right into it. One of the first things we want to talk about is kind of each of our queer journeys, right? So let's kind of go backwards here. Usually sometimes I'll go first. Let's start with Avery. How about you go first and
talk about first.
Yeah.
My queer history?
Yes.
Cool. So I probably have maybe the longest history out of all of us. I came out as bisexual when I was, I think, 16 to my mom. And I said, "Mom, I'm bi." And she said, "Yes, I know. You're really into Emma Watson." And that's basically how it went. I didn't come out to the rest of my family until I was in my 20s. So I identified as bisexual, and then I identified as a lesbian for a very long time. And eventually, for a while, I was identifying as lesbian plus Chris.
Good times.
And then... and then it sort of evolved into I learned more about bisexuality and sort of the more accurate definitions of it, and I now identify as primarily bisexual. So that's in terms of like my sexuality, my queer sexuality. In terms of my gender, I've been sort of questioning for a few years now, but it sort of all came to a head when I got pregnant and I realized how uncomfortable I was with my body. I hated maternity clothes, hated shopping for maternity clothes, hated wearing them. I wore a lot of leggings and men's t-shirts while I was pregnant. The childbirth process was really traumatic for me. I was already using they, them pronouns when I went into the hospital to have the baby, but I was misgendered. I would say 95% of the time, except with my nurse, Haley. Shout out to Haley if you're out there. You were amazing. I was misgendered a lot. And then immediately postpartum, the most difficult process there was breastfeeding. So that's kind of when I I was already using they, them pronouns, but sort of that whole process made me really have to face up to the fact that I am not a woman, which is my assigned gender at birth. So yeah, it started out as a very slow thing. And then a lot of stuff has accelerated the past few months. So yeah. I currently identify as bisexual and then trans, non-binary, they, them pronouns.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Evan?
Well, let's see. I have a very weird history because I didn't come out until much later in life. I didn't come out as either queer or gender divergent until I was at least 29. But looking back at my life before that, you know, I knew that I was a boy when I was a kid. I just didn't realize that you could be something other than your assigned gender at birth. I didn't know it was possible.
Right.
So when I thought about those things, I was just like, there's really nothing I can do about it, I guess.
It's the cards I was dealt.
Yeah. So I just kind of like, you know, lived with it. And then when I was a teenager, you know, I started to have bisexual feelings. But I wasn't really ready to deal with that, you know.
It's a lot.
And then trauma happened. Oh, fucking trauma. So, you know, that set me back quite a bit. And so I lived as a straight, cis, monogamous woman for 29 years of my life. And then I met Avery. And that changed my life forever because Avery and I had a love at first sight attraction, and we were both presenting as women at the time. So I realized very quickly, oh shit, I guess I'm bisexual. And, you know, and so, and ever since that realization, I've been very steadfast in understanding my sexuality. You know, I came out as bisexual when I was 29, and I haven't questioned it since. Preferences change over time sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I've been solidly bisexual for that entire duration. But my gender journey was a little bit more complicated than that. After coming out as bisexual and getting to interact with queer culture for the first time, I started to understand what trans and non-binary meant. And so early on, I realized that I knew I was genderqueer in some way.
Right.
So I identified as non-binary for a really long time, specifically bigender, which means I felt like both a man and a woman. And so I think I identified as non-binary using they, them pronouns for about 3 years. And during that time, you know, I tossed around the idea of starting testosterone. I tossed around the idea of top surgery, you know, and I was just like, I was just tortured about it. I just had no idea what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. you know. And then one day I woke up and I was just like, you know what? I think I'm a man and I think I need to do testosterone. And, you know, it just felt right one day. And that's what I did. And that's what I pursued. And ever since starting testosterone, I felt like it's been the right thing to do. And, you know, I feel better and better about my transition every day. And the further I get into my transition, you know, it's been a huge joy in my life to identify as trans. I've built a community and a support system around me that I really love. And being queer and being trans are huge parts of myself now. And, you know, I wouldn't change that for the world.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing yours too.
You're happier than you've ever been.
Absolutely. Absolutely happier than I've ever been.
Absolutely. I couldn't imagine 29 years and then it's like a light bulb, like.
Yeah. Well, and a lot like Avery, a big catalyst for me was being pregnant.
Right.
You know, because I'm Evie's birth parent. And so, you know, I was pregnant and I experienced all this dysphoria and I didn't know what it was because I wasn't connected to the community yet. And I just thought, why am I so bad at being a woman? Why do I suck so bad at this? Why is this so hard?
Makes sense now, doesn't it?
It does. Everything makes sense now. And I'm like, oh, well, it makes sense because I wasn't a woman. That's why I was just pretending to be. I was trying so hard to pretend to be a woman. And it just never worked out.
Right. Well, I'm very proud of both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, and you know, being as brave as you guys are. Because I know it had to be scary, too.
Oh, scared shitless.
Oh, terrifying.
I literally just came out to my parents as non-binary. Like, literally
right before we recorded this, yeah. Right, yeah. As we were starting to record this. Yeah, you haven't hit push send.
Yes, I texted them, and that is a perfectly acceptable thing to do.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you come out the way you want to come out.
Exactly.
You don't owe anybody. You don't owe anybody your coming out.
You come out.
Thanks, guys.
You come out the way you feel is best for you.
But yeah, scared shitless.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine, and that is why I hold both of you guys in such high regard in that, because like my journey when it comes to my gender, I have and always have been and always will be. I'm pretty certain I'm a cis man, but I do identify as bisexual. And my journey in that came along, honestly, first with your transition, Evan. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, when you had first come out as non-binary, first, there was a little bit of fear, but like I was like, I'm gonna go with it. But kind of as your journey progressed, there was a lot of fear throughout it, and the fear wasn't around you transitioning; it was around me questioning my sexuality and how would I identify and what would I be attracted to? Am I attracted to men and women, or my gender and other genders? So it was just a big question mark, and it caused me to kind of...
I can't imagine how that was for you, because I remember Evan coming out to me as non-binary and then as trans, and I wasn't particularly surprised, but it also, like, I never had to question my sexuality because I already knew I was queer.
Right.
And I have since I was a child.
Right. And ever since I met you, you've been queer.
Exactly.
Right. I had been with Evan as, you know, how you'd presented when we first met through your transition now all the way to being a man. And just the questions that were in my mind and just swirling and, you know, panic and worry and fear. Let me tell you, we probably say this in every episode, therapy helps.
Therapy is a godsend.
Therapy does help. But in the end of it, after, you know, you had completed your transition to a man, it's, you're still who you are, and I'm still attracted to you. So for me, I'm not afraid to, you know, admit that. I just took some time to figure that out, but I do identify as bisexual. I find my gender as well as others attractive. Mm-hmm. And that includes non-binary as well too. So that was the long and short of it for me. Also, you know, in the same token, when it comes to my, you know, sexuality, I do also identify as on the asexual spectrum and also being demisexual. I personally require a connection with somebody before I'm physical with them. I'd like to, you know, know more than just a name. I'd like to have some type of connection, but also on the aromantic spectrum as well. I tend to have a kind of a ebb and flow when it comes to being romantic. So I think that is considered gray sexual in my reading up on it.
Gray romantic.
I'm sorry. Yes. Gray romantic. Thank you. So yeah, I'm a bit of a mixed bag when it comes to my sexuality and my desire for romance.
Well, good thing your gender's clear.
It's the only thing that's consistent. And let me tell you, being queer, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. Being cisgendered, just because, and we've talked about this, all three of us, that it stinks because it's something that I can hide behind, but I don't like hiding behind it.
It is simultaneously a privilege and erasure.
Yes, in the same token. So I do struggle with that because I struggle with the feelings of, do I belong? Don't I belong? Because of that. But
I feel that way being cis passing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It is a struggle. So, yeah. Go on talking forever about that, but I do want to get to other topics, but that is the general kind of gist of my sexuality, my gender, and my romantic desire. If you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out. I'd be glad to answer them. As I said, I'm an open book. So
we all are.
So that's kind of a bit of each of our journeys about our queer stories and where we originated from and that. But what we really want to talk about, kind of the next thing, is being queer, being polyamorous, and dating. So as you guys know, we've been in a triad since we all got together back in, what was that, 2017? Mm. But when we opened up our relationship at the beginning of last year, yeah, man, it's been beginning it's been of 2021. Over a year,
yeah.
We had to navigate opening our relationship and dating again. And for me, that was scary because at that point in my dating endeavors, I've only ever dated Evan and Avery. So I had no idea. And also now coming out as queer, which technically when we opened up, I wasn't identifying as bisexual at the time. I was still questioning myself at that point. It came soon after we opened up, but I was still working through that. But what about you, Evan? Like, how's dating been?
Well, the first thing you have to understand about being polyamorous is, like, you have an opportunity to date other people. However, the dating pool becomes much smaller because there's not a lot of polyamorous people out there. So to find other polyamorous people is really difficult. So not only are you trying to look for polyamorous people, but now you're also looking for people that are compatible with your sexuality and your attractions.
Right. It's such a common misconception that people are like, oh, you're polyamorous. You get to date everybody now. It's so not true.
Like, you're polyamorous and you're bisexual. Your dating pool is huge. Actually, it's tiny.
And especially because of biphobia, which is rampant even within the queer community, mm-hmm. A lot of people will not date bisexual people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that I personally have not come across yet, but I have heard about it.
And then throw on top of that being trans.
Right.
So between being poly, bisexual, and trans, my dating pool is very small.
You basically only date other poly, bisexual, trans people.
That is very correct. Like, literally all three of my romantic partners are bisexual, poly, and trans.
But hey, you want to compare OkCupid notifications?
I mean, sure. As few people as I have at my disposal, cis men have it a little bit harder on dating apps.
I'm not looking for sympathy here because, I mean, we make our own bed, right? But what about you, Avery?
Dating?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had fine luck dating. It's complicated because I just recently came out with my gender journey. So, but a lot of cis men see like my profile picture and that I'm bisexual and are very interested in that. I prefer AFAB people though. That's my, I have a preference, but dating hasn't been too bad for me. Online dating can be difficult for me.
Right.
I tend to be better in person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very charming, you guys. Just so you know. But yeah, being like queer dating on dating apps as a poly person, it's very much like feast or famine.
Right.
And you have a lot of people that are figuring out they're queer in like heterosexual passing relationships, mm-hmm. who are new to poly, wanting to go out and experiment, which I think is probably one of the harder parts of dating as a poly person, is that you click on somebody's profile and it says they're poly, and then you talk to them and you learn that.
Right. And I think in the best app that we've had luck with being polyamorous has been OkCupid. I would say it's probably one of the most polyam friendly dating apps out there. Bumble's okay, but even taking a step back, you know, putting, you know, the queerness aside, just being polyamorous in the dating scene is tough alone. But then, as you said, when you add being queer,
multiple identities,
because you get the people that are on there, they're like, well, if you're polyamorous, just, you know, I'm not your third, or, you know, I'm not looking for a unicorn, I'm not your unicorn. And it's like, it's just, you know, you get those, and then you get the just the very like picky judgment, like they have their checklist right on their profile, and it's just like every time I come across that, it's just so, I don't know, it's cringe to me.
Something that I have discovered recently as far as dating goes, ever since I came out as a trans man, you know, I'm dating two other trans men, and I'm also dating Avery, who identifies as non-binary as well as trans. I am pretty much only interested in dating other trans and non-binary people, and that is called T for T.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not particularly interested in dating cisgender people anymore. If I met a cisgendered person, they would have to really impress me right. for me to consider dating a cisgendered person.
And I think that's a problem with the dating apps too, is they don't evolve as quickly as the community does.
Mm.
When it comes for to being able to find those types of, you know, I guess you could call them filters, right? To like look for the same people that you're looking for. They don't evolve fast enough. And that also makes it difficult too.
OkCupid has been the only dating app that I have seen that allows for you to identify yourself as multiple queer identities, mm-hmm. and to yes. also filter your matches through multiple queer identity filters.
They actually, I don't know if you guys have gone in and updated your profile recently or within the last couple of months, but they now also allow you to identify as things like butch or femme or like a top or bottom.
I did notice that, yeah.
Switch.
I've had my app shut off for a while now, so.
I don't need it anymore, but I was using it a couple months ago and was able to update it that way.
Nice. Well, that's good to know. Again, we're not sponsoring any of these. We're just giving you our personal experience.
Yeah.
So we've dealt with trying to, you know, filter through and finding the people in these apps, but also being polyamorous and being queer, we've also dealt with discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been something that's difficult. And I know that we've been through experiences personally where it's happened around me, but I didn't notice it until after you'd told me. And honestly, I know this is the experience we were talking about earlier that we haven't shared yet, but we will, I'm sure, that you told me. I was like, man, if I would have known, I probably would have been going to jail right now.
Yeah. I mean, living in Columbus, we are pretty privileged, to be honest, that's to live true. In a community that is so accepting of queer people. And there's a ton of queer people around us. You know, there's a huge community here.
There is.
We're very lucky in that regard. You know, so for people who live in more rural areas who are not connected to a community, it is way harder for them. And, you know, they face a lot more challenges. They have a lot more opportunities for dangerous discrimination to occur.
Right.
Whereas things that happen here in Columbus, you know, the most exciting things that have happened to me are, you know, like people clocking me in public and like maybe realizing I'm not in the right restroom or I've been called a faggot around town. Just with my hanging out with my family, doing family things. But for every one person that calls me a faggot, there are 10 people who say, hey, I like your shirt, man.
Right.
Or, you know, just like verbally support me in other ways.
For people who don't know what the term clocking means, it basically means like somebody in public sees you and recognizes that you're queer. Or trans, mm-hmm. essentially.
Right. And I think also, you know, going back to saying, you know, living in Columbus, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, we're basically a queer Mecca within Columbus surrounded by conservative.
Yeah, when I drive places, like I just drove to Pittsburgh not that long ago and I had to drive through some rural areas, I do not stop to go to the bathroom because I am very visibly queer. And there are a lot of places I do not feel safe even existing
right.
as I do, let alone being out.
Again, something else I couldn't even imagine.
So, and you know, public bathrooms are so precarious for me these days because I'm passing as a man sometimes.
Right.
But not all the time. And I never know what someone is going to perceive me as. And I have no control over what they perceive me as.
Right.
Because I'm just in that part of my transition where I appear very androgynous. So people are confused by my gender all the time.
So it's very affirming when you do have those positive experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But something else that we have to consider is there are not a lot of protections legally for people like us. So we have to be very careful about where we come out as queer and as poly. And I think that I have gotten more discrimination as a poly person than I have as a queer person, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely agree with that.
And so, like, some of us don't feel safe coming out at work, for instance. I have a great privilege of working with Equitas here in Columbus, which is a queer organization. So I felt very safe coming out as queer and trans at Equitas. But even at Equitas, I got misgendered certain places. I received discrimination for being polyamorous at Equitas. So even places that should be the most affirming and safe, there are still landmines where you don't expect mm-hmm. them to be.
Mm-hmm. And I, on the other hand, work for a faith-based organization and am not out at work about any of it. My sexuality, my polyamorous identity, nothing. My gender. Well, I came out to my boss, but we're keeping it private right now. But yeah.
Yeah, and I'm about 50-50 out at work. It just depends on the person or who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. Granted, I work for a very inclusive company. I'm still very cautious with who I'm out to.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, and in my situation, it's easier to be out about being bisexual than it is about being polyamorous.
Yeah. Well, I think the way that culture has shifted in recent years, I think people are more familiar with queer and trans identities because of the way that the media portrays them. And there's really not a lot of polyamory in the media. So it's not mainstream yet. People don't understand it. People feel threatened by it.
Exactly.
And so I think that that tends to be a little bit harder of a pill to swallow for some people.
It is. I remember an experience coming out as poly to somebody and like immediately, like, I've had the experience of mortification mm-hmm. and I've also had the experience of, wow, I want to know more about that. So it's definitely on a spectrum for sure on the reactions, but I worry and fear about the discrimination piece of it, of being ridiculed because I'm polyamorous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So along with the discrimination we've experienced, we've also had some acceptance as well when it comes to being poly and queer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Acceptance and being part of a community have been some of the best things that we've experienced.
Finding that community here.
Yeah. Finding a community.
Absolutely.
Community is one of the best parts of being queer.
Oh, it absolutely is.
And especially here in Columbus, there's such a community here. And we have like one of the biggest prides in the Midwest. And they're doing pride again for the first time since the pandemic this year. So
I know, it's on my birthday weekend.
It's going to be really exciting. We're all really excited to get back out there and celebrate ourselves again.
I'm so looking forward to it. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to be out with the people that we all love and that love us for who we are.
Yeah, because, you know, we've experienced acceptance and love at a smaller scale. A lot of my family has been really supportive, so we've been able to build that community for ourselves here at home. My sister in particular, hi Gabby, has been the biggest ally in the entire world for us.
Even down to Evie.
Yeah.
Evie is such a pronoun warrior.
She really is.
She is the best at pronouns.
And she corrects anyone, doesn't even care.
She will correct you, and she has no shame about it. She is not shy.
She corrects everyone, too. It's pretty unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Raised a good one in that one.
So if you're coming out about new pronouns and you ever need somebody to follow behind you and correct people when they misgender you, we can come hang out with you with Evie for the day.
Absolutely. Because as soon as you're introduced once...
And she'll ask you your pronouns, too.
She will ask you, and she will protect it,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing. So, yeah, definitely having the community has been something that's been a help. And, you know, even when it comes to my sexuality journey, when it comes to my being gray romantic, being asexual, or I'm sorry, demisexual, finding those communities even online and in social media.
Oh my God. Joining queer Facebook groups has changed my life. Like, that has been such an integral way that I've connected to my community. Mm-hmm. And I've done so much self-exploration and learned so much about myself and about queer culture. I've just learned so much just being a part just Facebook groups. And not only that, but like a queer Facebook group is where I met Nate.
Right.
Right.
You know, and, you know, we were best friends for a really long time and now we're romantic.
Eat your heart out, dating apps.
And he's one of the most important people in my life. I would have never met him had I not been, had I just not commented on a single post in a queer support group.
You gained more than knowledge in that group.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is genuinely the best part about being queer, is other queer people and being able to build that community for yourself. I've never had better friends than the ones I've made.
Well, I'll tell you what,
queer people.
Having the community, you can identify someone that's a part of the community and you just feel safe.
Yeah. Exactly. And even being in relationships and dating other queer people, like being able to date other trans men has been such a rewarding experience for me, because like you have a bond with that person because you just understand each other on such a fundamental level that like other people just cannot touch.
And that's been really important for me on my gender journey as well, you know, being in a nesting relationship with a trans man and realizing I'm questioning my gender and being able to come to Evan, a complete crying, blubbering mess, and being like, I'm having these feelings that I don't understand. And he can hug me and tell me he loves me and tell me he understands exactly what I'm going through. So I do not think I can overstate how important it is to have other queer people in your life, even if it's just online.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. You need community as a queer person.
Because otherwise you feel alone.
Absolutely.
You absolutely do.
Yeah, absolutely do. Well, the last topic we want to hit on, because I know this episode is probably going to be a little bit longer than our others, but it's such a good topic, right? I mean, we can go on forever about this, but what everyone wants to know.
What everybody asks about.
Every single time.
The sex.
Queer sex, queer poly sex.
It's fantastic.
It's the best sex I've ever had.
And you know what? Like, you tell people that queer sex is fantastic. And, you know, straight people are just like, well, I just don't understand how or why. Like, what makes it different? What makes it special? And the thing is that there's no rule book.
Exactly.
There's no plan of action.
Exactly.
You can literally do whatever your heart desires. There's no end game.
If you're breaking down that barrier, that boundary, in the first place of society telling you that queer sex is bad, that queer love is bad, right. If you're taking that boundary, that barrier that has been set in front of you, and you're pushing it over and you're saying, I'm not going to abide by that, you literally can do whatever the fuck you want.
And there is no shame.
None.
None whatsoever.
You have completely thrown away the entire concept of shame when it comes to sex.
And you know what that does? It makes for some fucking good sex.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does.
When there is no expectations and there is no shame, like literally the world is your oyster and you can do whatever you want to do. And under those circumstances is when, is what births the most creativity. And so I have had the most creative and fulfilling sex with somebody who has the same body parts as I do, because there wasn't a built-in plan of action. You know, we had to figure out what our bodies liked. We had to communicate with each other. And when you're communicating with each other about your bodies, that's how you learn what's pleasurable and what you want.
Well, and to me too, sex can transcend what genitals a person has anyway. right? It's a, for me, it's the connection that I can have with the person.
Well, yeah. And something that a lot of straight people are taught is that sex only looks one way. It is penis and vagina sex.
Yep.
And it ends when the penis holder comes.
Right.
And then it's over. Like, that's the goal, is to get the penis haver to come.
But just having that expectation on it puts so much pressure on the performative piece of sex.
On both parties.
On both parties. Mm-hmm.
And when you remove that expectation, particularly when you're having queer sex that involves two people with the same body parts, with the same genitals, you're completely throwing that rule book out. And you can literally write whatever story you want to. Right. And it requires really intentional communication about what you want and what feels good and looks good to you. As someone, as a vagina haver, arousal is not necessarily an external experience, right, that somebody can see. Arousal and pleasure a lot of times is an internal experience, and you have to be able to communicate that with your partner. So the ability to lose shame in your sexual encounters is so important.
Well, and for me, being a cis man and doing basically vanilla sex most of my life, that pressure was always there to, mm-hmm, always have to perform, and it always had to end in coming. And if you didn't, you were a failure. And it's something that I struggle with. And it's something that I still, to this day, still struggle with a little bit, but I'm getting better at it. But sex does not have to end in orgasm.
No, it doesn't.
Sex is an experience.
And this is a poly podcast. So something really great about being queer and poly and a lover of sex
is group sex.
Yeah.
More than two.
If you've never had group sex, highly recommend. Just going to put
10
that
out of
there.
10.
Also, every time somebody asks me about threesomes, I always give them my best piece of threesome advice. You do not pair up ever. What you do is two people work on one person at a time. And so you're working as a team to pleasure one person at a time. And then you just take turns. You just rotate.
The best.
And then that way, everyone is getting exactly what they want.
And it's okay to ask for what you want.
Exactly.
So I'm telling you guys, we can literally talk about sex for an entire episode or two or three or 10. But
everybody should have a threesome. Go do it.
I agree. I definitely agree. But hopefully this gives everyone an idea, kind of, you know, at least from our perspective, of what we've gone through, what we've dealt with when it comes to being polyamorous, being queer, with our own sexuality and our gender presentation, and some of the things we dealt with. If you guys have any questions, again, we say it so many times, we say it in so many episodes, we are open books. Reach out to us on our social media platforms. If you're friends of ours, you can private message us. If you're not friends of ours, follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Also, you can email us at info@3psinapoly.com. Anything you guys want to close with while we end the episode, Evan?
Thanks for giving us a platform to talk about this kind of stuff.
Absolutely. I think it's important for people to hear other people's stories.
I completely agree. And a lot of these stories would never be told without these types of platforms.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I think this is very important. And I think I hope we can inspire others to want to tell their story.
Mm-hmm. And this is one step on the journey to normalization.
It's going to be a fight, but it's a fight worth having. Mm-hmm. Any closing words or any parting things, Avery?
No.
You good?
Queer sex is the best sex I've ever had.
Have a threesome.
Yeah, have a threesome. Highly recommend. Queer sex is the best sex I've ever had. Being poly is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'll echo what Evan said, is that, you know, having this platform has been really important to us, and social media and stuff like that has really made our gender and sexuality journeys possible, you know?
It really has.
So thank you guys for listening.
Yes. Thank you all for listening. Your curiosity is also what helps drive us to want to do this and, you know, normalize it. right? This is inspirational. So keep sending your ideas, your questions, your requests to us on our social media platforms or in our email. Again, info@3peasinapoly.com. Again, you can also find us if you are not following or subscribed to our podcast. You can go to listen.3peasinapoly.com. We are on all streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, you name it, we're probably on there. Again, thank you all for listening. Our next episode, we are going to be talking about polyamory and mental health. So we have a lot to talk about there. So stay tuned. Get the word out. Share. We appreciate you. We love you guys. And we will talk to you at the next episode. See y'all later.
Bye, guys.
Bye.